All right, hour number three here. Matthew Collar filling in for Henry Lake. And it is time to talk some Minnesota Vikings football. So they get a win yesterday. And what a victory it was. If maybe you changed the channel to Home Alone or something during offensive possessions, flipped around, and then came back to the Netflix and only saw the Vikings defense, you might be like, hey, great game. That was a lot of fun. If you saw how they played offensively, then you were sad and you did not have as much fun. It was one of the most frustrating games that I have ever seen on offense, to the point where you thought every single drop back, there was a really great chance of a calamity happening. It's a miracle that they didn't turn the ball over, considering how many times Max Brosmer was hit, how many times he was sacked. And when I went back and reviewed the game, I had a sense when I was there that even though the Vikings had some backup offensive linemen in, it was probably more about the quarterback than anything else and his inexperience. And he was an undrafted free agent for a reason. As much as I respect Max Brosmer, there's not a lot of experience there and doesn't have physical skills to just start scrambling around and running away from Detroit Lions players. And that really came to fruition. And they could just barely get the football out of his hands at any point, completed 9 passes, but lost almost as many yards and sacks as they gained from passing the football. Most of their best possessions were just causing a turnover and then not giving the ball back and kicking a really long field goal from Earth's best gentleman at kicking a football, which would be Will Reichard. And if they didn't have him, who knows if they even win the game. And then they come up with one great trick play on a sweep to Jordan Addison for a 65-yard touchdown, and then they win the game. But the last couple of weeks, I mean, is just seeing J.J. McCarthy make progress, and then you have to go back to the number three quarterback again, has been incredibly frustrating to try to figure out what the Minnesota Vikings have in J.J. McCarthy. And there is a chance that he plays against the Green Bay Packers. There's also a chance that John Wolford, who is their third quarterback, a guy who's bounced around as a backup for a while and has barely played in the NFL, there's a chance that he ends up playing if they can't stomach the idea of playing Max Brosmer again and if J.J. McCarthy's hand doesn't heal. But the fourth career injury to J.J. McCarthy has put the Vikings in a spot where they have to look at other quarterbacks this offseason. Now, that doesn't mean completely giving up on J.J. McCarthy. It doesn't mean his career has to be over because he's had a couple of injuries or he performed overall as one of the poorer quarterbacks in the NFL. He's 42nd out of 44 in quarterback rating. You can use whatever stat you like. Even though he's had dropped passes from wide receivers, his completion percentage adjusted for drops is 34th out of 44. Any stat that you run through, it looks very, very bad for J.J. McCarthy. And what the defense did yesterday really underscored how much this team could have done had they had average quarterback play, mediocre quarterback play. I mean, the twisted irony is that if they had a season from Kirk Cousins, they're probably winning 11 games. But of course, it's hard to build a roster like this with Cousins' expense. But still, the way that they played on defense yesterday was just like right it across the sky what this could have been had the Vikings had halfway decent quarterback play this season instead of ranking 31st out of 32 in the NFL in team quarterback rating. And it was not helped by Brosmer. It wasn't helped that much by Carson Wentz. And it certainly wasn't helped by a quarterback in J.J. McCarthy who was inexperienced. And one of the struggles for McCarthy is he's played 8.5 games, not 17. So we're still talking about going into year 3, McCarthy as this very wildly inexperienced quarterback. He only threw 220-something passes this year, and even if he throws 40 more against the Green Bay Packers, who may not be playing their starters next week, even if he has a awesome game and throws for 350, and everybody walks out of the stadium saying, wow, what a showing. Even missing one more game, because it's not clear if he's going to play or not, even with missing another game with another injury, to me says you cannot go into 2026 and have the potential to waste another season of all these good players. The struggle to get the ball to Justin Jefferson is astounding. Like, imagine, think about how in the past it was like tying your shoes. It was the thing that you just assumed was going to happen. You didn't even think about it. It was like what everyone else did was the discussion. But Justin Jefferson's going to have 8 for 110. And now it's like impossible. It feels like it's climbing Mount Kilimanjaro to get him 4 catches in a single game. And that's another thing that cannot happen into the future. And if J.J. McCarthy is not the guy who can get him the football, then someone else has to play quarterback. But I want to make a declaration about this. You're not going to like any of the ideas. I promise you're not. When we look at the other ideas, other than just rolling with J.J. McCarthy and having a regular backup quarterback, which seems very dangerous to me, if he's only going to end, no matter what, he's ending the season with less than 10 games total played start to finish because he left at halftime against the Giants. So 9.5. If he's, even in the best case scenario where he plays next week, you're not getting to 10 full games. That's not enough for anybody to know what J.J. McCarthy actually is. And it's not enough for him to have progressed more than likely to the point where you're talking about, oh yeah, he'll take a big leap next year. No, it's still going to be learning time for J.J. McCarthy, which to me says with the seats likely to get a little bit warmer for somebody like Kevin O'Connell, for the potential of the defense to not bail his ass out the way that it has over these last few games, to actually need to produce offensively to get to 500 or above next year, because defenses are hard to keep up. If Harrison Smith isn't on this team next year, if Brian Flores isn't here next year, you need to be much, much, much better offensively than they were this season. And they have to believe that J.J. McCarthy is going to get to that point, or they need to find somebody else. The one thing we don't know is how much they truly buy into McCarthy behind the scenes, because a lot of quarterback goes beyond just, hey, you know, did he win the game? Did he throw the football well, which McCarthy hasn't really done, except for the last couple of games. But when you start looking at the other options, boy, does it feel like classic Minnesota Vikings land, which forever has existed in a spot where you're always trying to pick up somebody else's leftovers and throw them in with a bunch of good receivers and probably a good offensive coach and then hope. And we could go through the many, many times that this has happened through Vikings history. The most notable in 1998, where you have Randall Cunningham coming off the bench to produce one of the greatest offensive seasons in the sport's history. And even Brad Johnson was a guy that they had drafted in the late rounds and they had developed. And then they brought him back at one point, Gus Frerotte. Later on, you have Case Keenum. You have Sam Darnold. And look, Darnold worked out great. It turns out he's actually a really good quarterback, as the Vikings must not have known. And the Seattle Seahawks found out this year by moving on from Geno Smith and getting Sam Darnold. And now they have a chance to go chase a Super Bowl, and the Vikings are going to sit there and watch them do it. But Sam Darnold was another team's, in fact, several other teams' quarterback that the Vikings scooped up. And when they got him, everybody said, oh yeah, Sam Darnold, okay. He'll play the first couple weeks and then it'll be J.J. McCarthy time. And people continue to say some version of that all the way through the season. Well, just, you know, they're 7-2, but hey, wait till McCarthy gets here. Oh, they, you know, got to the 14-2. Well, they still need to go with McCarthy. That no one really believed that Sam Darnold was really a good quarterback. And this season has also told you just how good he was and how nobody is a actual quarterback whisperer. You can help your quarterback, but you can't make your quarterback. And Kevin O'Connell has certainly found that out along with everybody who dubbed him the quarterback whisperer, which means if they're going to succeed next year, either J.J. McCarthy himself has to this offseason take a big leap forward, and if he doesn't get another game, then based on 200 passes, figure out the National Football League, or you got to look elsewhere. And I think that there's a good chance that they do look for somebody who can very seriously compete. You don't get 5 years as a quarterback, and we saw this from Indianapolis, but the list is not friendly. The list is maybe Arizona will cut Kyler Murray, which everyone is going to hate that idea. The list is maybe the Raiders, who are tanking, will give you Geno Smith, and everyone's going to hate that idea. How about bringing back Daniel Jones, who was a Viking for a little while and then went to Indianapolis, tore his Achilles, but he might be able to come back and play by training camp. Everyone's going to hate that idea too. There is no plan that you could come up with for another quarterback to come into Minnesota that anyone is going to think will work. But the thing is, when you start looking at other quarterbacks' performances that you have told other people, I'm sure, in your life, this guy stinks, or you've had them on fantasy, oh, Kyler Murray, oh, Geno Smith, oh, whoever, oh, how bad is this guy? Go compare their numbers to what J.J. McCarthy did this year. And it's probably wildly better. Geno Smith has had a terrible season this year, and his quarterback rating is 15.5 points higher than J.J. McCarthy. And I think McCarthy has a lot of talent, and I think if he could stay on the field for the entire season, we may have gotten to the end here and felt pretty good about it. But how can you judge off of 220 passes whether he's going to take a big enough step forward to truly compete next year with all the other pieces that the Vikings have? And this most recent injury to me said, you've got to get somebody serious that could start. And if he beats them out in training camp, then great. Then you trade the other person like they did with Sam Howell. There's always going to be somebody looking for a quarterback, or you just have whoever as a backup. But it's going to take a real investment. They cannot just go get Joe Flacco, or you might be destined to be the Cleveland Browns. I mean, maybe not that bad with the talent that they have. But, you know, the Browns, they made a first-round playoff with Flacco that 1 year. He came back, and then they got destroyed. It's hard to look around and find someone that there's even a scenario where that person could succeed. And the only two guys that I could see it are Geno Smith and Kyler Murray. But even then, I could just hear the nausea of everyone listening when you hear those names, because Arizona's giving up on Kyler Murray. And there's always been the discussion about, like, what kind of guy is he? Like, how invested is he? All that sort of stuff. And then Geno Smith was good briefly and fun, but then this year has completely fallen off the face of the earth with the Vegas Raiders. These are your options. Trading for Mac Jones is a potential option. He once lit up the Vikings for 400 yards in 2022. That's a potential option. But then you'll have to trade the San Francisco 49ers something. That's not a great option either. That's the position the Vikings put themselves in by putting all their eggs in the middle of the basket, or whatever it is, all their chips in the middle of the table, all the eggs in the basket of J.J. McCarthy. And they thought that as long as they had these receivers, as long as they went out and got some linemen, as long as they could coach it up, that it would just happen. But as we've found out in the NFL, that's not exactly how it always works, especially when there are injuries involved. So I would say, though, that Sunday, if you're, you know, Vikings fans watching, the worst thing would have been, and put the, you know, tanking thing aside or the draft status or whatever, the worst thing would have been if the entire nation tuned in to watch your game on Christmas Day and you just embarrassed yourself. Instead, everyone came out of the game talking about how good your defense was. So at least it was something. At least it wasn't ruin your Christmas like a couple years ago when Alvin Kamara went for 6 touchdowns against the Vikings in an absolutely miserable game in 2020. So that didn't happen. But I think it was a game that said some pretty strong things about how good the rest of the team is, how much they left on the table by not having good quarterback play, and how desperate they should be to find other options at quarterback in the offseason. And that doesn't have to mean that J.J. McCarthy's career is over, but when you get to year three, that's when the 49ers bailed on Trey Lance. That's when the Indianapolis Colts went and got Daniel Jones and he beat out Anthony Richardson. Like, there's plenty of precedent for this to happen, even though, you know, everyone wanted J.J. McCarthy to be that guy that they had sought out for so long. Speaking of the Vikings, Harrison Smith had a great game yesterday. I want to talk about where he exists in Vikings history when we return. Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake. So I thought watching Harrison Smith against the Detroit Lions was kind of like if you have a 40-year-old baseball pitcher, like Clayton Kershaw or something, where the guy throws 88, he's cooked, it's over. But he's still got enough in the tank. He still understands how to pitch. He's still got some off-speed stuff, some veteran savvy. And that's been what we've seen from Harrison Smith. He gets a sack. He gets an interception. He gets a pass breakup. And he's directing the defense out there. And it's fun to watch. There's something special about that when a guy's physical skills are not what they used to be. And yet he could still play with everybody who's 25 years old, even though he's 10 years older than them, and make plays and be one of the best players still on the field. Very cool. Also, it's hilarious to me that Harrison and I are very similar in age, and he is talked about as an ancient person whose bones are about to turn to dust. And I'm like, yeah, you know, like still feeling good, still feeling pretty youthful. It's like, this man is 126 years old in football years. How is he still living? That is how, I mean, the game takes the toll on these players, and you see very, very few who have played as much past the age of 35 as Harrison Smith. So it did come to mind for me, like, where does he rank in terms of all-time Minnesota Vikings? So I went to the Pro Football Reference page, which has a statistic called approximate value, which is what it sounds like. It tries to all-encompass, no matter what position the player is, grab all of their value that they gave to their franchise. And Harrison Smith is 20th all-time in approximate value. Now, that's over a career, so there might have been other guys who played for not as long but had maybe bigger impacts or not as many games that might have been a little better, but they didn't play for their entire careers with Minnesota. Like, Jared Allen goes to the Hall of Fame. His is 35th as a Viking, but that's just as a Viking. That's only from 2008 till 2013. So naturally, Harrison Smith has a lot longer time. I'll give you the top of the list, which is, you'll be shocked, Carl Eller, Alan Page, and Jim Marshall. It breaks my heart that Jim Marshall did not go into the Hall of Fame before he passed away, because to me, he is the definition of a Hall of Famer, having played 270 games for the Minnesota Vikings. The same world that says availability is the best ability doesn't put the most available player in history. And also, there was a project to go back and find out the sack numbers, because sacks didn't become an official stat until the 80s. And it turned out that there were plenty of seasons where Jim Marshall was deserving of Pro Bowls that other guys got it that did not have as many sacks or not as many fumbles forced as Jim Marshall did. But the wrong way play and all that, you know, probably goes into him not being in. Anyway, he was the third most valuable Viking of all time. And then Randall McDaniel, Fran Tarkenton, Mick Tinglehoff, Ron Yeary. So the OGs dominate the top of this list. Those guys played for the team forever. They were going to Super Bowls. After that, more modern players, though, where he fits in more modern players. Chris Carter is 9th. Kevin Williams, also a deserving Hall of Famer, 10th. John Randall, 11th. Chris Dolman, 12th. Adrian Peterson, 15th. Moss is 16th. And then Harrison Smith is 20th. And I think when we look at players in the post-Moss, because if we try to define eras in Minnesota Vikings history, it's clearly Purple People Eaters, pre-Fran, then when Fran came back, and then there's 80s with Tommy Kramer and Wade Wilson and Anthony Carter and the great defenses there, and then there's an early 90s where they had lots of talent but couldn't quite get over the top in the playoffs. And then Moss is his own era in itself, the Randy Moss era as a Minnesota Viking. And when Moss leaves, over the last 20 years of post-Moss, there's a lot of good players who have come through here, but there's not many outside of Adrian Peterson who you could say were the truly, and Justin Jefferson, were the truly elite of the elite, future Hall of Fame caliber type of players. I don't know if Harrison Smith will get in or not, but that type of player, there's been a lot of good. There's been a lot of Everson Griffins. Danielle Hunter, I think, will be a Hall of Famer eventually, but a big part of that now will be his career with the Houston Texans, because he's now put together multiple fantastic seasons. I mean, my goodness, 25 sacks over the last 2 years with the Texans. Still thought of as a great Viking, but had he finished his career here and had many more double-digit sack seasons and that sort of thing, he probably would have elevated up on this list. But a really good player, not somebody that made All-Pro every single year. Kirk Cousins is the definition quarterback of what the Vikings have been for the last 20 years. Very good. He's a very good Minnesota Viking quarterback. Certainly a hell of a lot better than what we've seen this year, but not the All-Pro type of dragging you deep into the playoffs every year. It's really been, I mean, the number of players who I could say were really good. Anthony Barr, Eric Kendricks, Xavier Rhodes. These players are good. But in terms of real greatness, Delvin Cook goes into another very, very good category. Antoine Winfield, very good. But actually great, it's really just been Harrison and Justin Jefferson. And I think you could say that borderline Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen for greatness, but those guys will not really make Hall of Fame cases. They were good as a tandem. I'm not sure that they've been as good since. Diggs was pretty good in Buffalo for a couple years there, and Thielen was not great with Carolina. I mean, both players, they had their run, but it was only a couple years, and it wasn't Hall of Fame level greatness. So Harrison Smith kind of represents this entire era of being pretty good and having decent seasons and never really getting there. And you could feel that ripping at him yesterday when he was talking about just feeling like the fans are so deserving and how they have not been able to get there. And it's kind of telling that there's only really two guys I could come up with, Jefferson and Smith, since Randy Moss left, that really... And there were some other guys that were still like around, and Jared Allen, Favre for a year, right? Adrian Peterson is the other one. Since Moss left, Peterson will go into the Hall of Fame easily. Jefferson is on a Hall of Fame track. Smith might struggle just because of his position and the fact that he didn't play in Super Bowls. And then you get Jared Allen briefly, and that's kind of it. Kevin Williams is deserving, but that's kind of it. And it speaks to the purgatory that Vikings fans have lived in and continue to, as here they are with more questions about quarterback and sitting with an 8-8 record, hoping to win for pride in week 18. But it's still week 17. So we're going to come back and talk about what is on the slate for tomorrow. An exciting couple of football games, and then the ones to watch on Sunday, some with implications, some just really good matchups. So we'll take a break. We'll come right back. Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake. For those wondering, UTSA is up 24-14 on FIU. And it's been a good game. I'm enjoying more bowl action. The Gophers won earlier today. It was drama. It was down to the very last second. I loved it. Josh McCown's son is ripping it up in this game, playing really well. And you never know what random connection you'll see in a bowl game. And this one is the, what does that even say?
Serve Pro First Responder Bowl. This one, I believe, is in Dallas or Frisco. I know it's in Texas. I can't remember where it's Dallas or Frisco.
Oh, my apologies to the folks at Serve Pro for not being able to read that on our television. We've got a great weekend of football coming up. There's a lot of bowl games, and they start at 10 a.m. tomorrow, which I don't know how you people are about football, but I feel blessed when I can wake up, get around a little bit, and then you got a bowl game already going on. So that's going to be at 10 a.m. tomorrow. The National Football League, though, want to look at some of these games because you may have a little bit of FOMO watching them. There's a lot of very good matchups, a lot of juice for playoff seedings and all that stuff that's going on the next two days. So let's talk about these games. We've got Houston and the Los Angeles Chargers. Jonathan, who would you pick for tomorrow afternoon's contest between the Texans and the Chargers? This is a 10-5 versus an 11-4 matchup.
So the Texans have basically the league's number one defense. And the Chargers, even though his hand is hurt, Justin Herbert has played very well through this injury the last couple of weeks. But I think the defense of the Texans has really risen up, and they have enough weapons on Houston's offense with the emergence of Woody Marks, with the emergence of the Cyclone trio of wide receivers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's become, I can't believe this, Houston has become Aim South with Xavier Hutchinson, Jaden Higgins, and Jalen Noel. I can't believe all three of them got drafted by the Texans. By the way, Chiefs could have used one of those three. Anyway, so I give the Texans the advantage here. I think they'll pull it out.
The Chargers have been able to survive through great quarterback play, the injuries to their running backs, and their offensive tackles. To me, this is a game where Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson just destroy the edges of the Los Angeles Chargers and do not give them much of a chance. Can they do enough on offense? CJ Stroud has 16 touchdowns this year. That's it. They just have not been able to really consistently move the football, but I think the defense for the Texans is going to be too much for them. The ESPN matchup predictor, whatever that does, has the Chargers a slightly better chance to win this football game. But I don't know. It is at home for the Chargers, and it's not like Texans fans everywhere are going to be able to fly to or presumably are flying to Los Angeles to fill the stadium. And I would also assume, since the Chargers are good, that they have some fans now in Los Angeles. So I don't think it'll be one of those takeover games. I will give the slight edge, though, still to the Houston Texans. Then later on, imagine when Peacock, so this one's on NFL Network. The Saturday night game is on Peacock. So if you don't have it, I'm sorry. But you won't be missing good quarterbacks, at least. When this season began, and they put this one on the schedule, those schedule makers had to be so proud of themselves. Ooh, we're going to have Lamar. And then, when Micah Parsons gets over there, this game is going to be so great. And Jordan Love, we got a matchup of star quarterbacks, star defensive players, and everyone's hurt. So it looks like Tyler Huntley is going to start for Baltimore. Lamar Jackson is listed as doubtful. And Jordan Love is not playing. It will be future Minnesota Vikings quarterback Malik Willis, who I did not mention earlier as one of the options, but he is, along with Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins and whoever else is available as well. What do you got for this matchup of backup QBs?
This game will probably be settled on defense. It'll probably be settled in the teens. I don't know if it – maybe it's first to 20 wins, but I'd have to say Tyler Huntley has done serviceable. I'd say Malik Willis has done a little better than serviceable.
I agree.
I think the Malik Willis factor, if Lamar Jackson's out, I think that plays a bigger role, a better role for the Packers. Plus, they're at home. I give the Packers the advantage here.
At home is a big deal, and Baltimore losing to New England was kind of their last stand. I know it's not over, but it felt like their last stand of, hey, can we actually be a playoff team? And without Lamar, they're just so different. And Lamar has been different this year. It was interesting that there was a column that came out this week in the Baltimore Sun talking about Lamar and his future and pointing a lot of the fingers at him. And one thing is, health has been a struggle for him, but also kind of talked about, well, internally, is he this or that, or does he fall asleep in meetings and all that sort of stuff. And I'm more inclined to wonder, who is it that's saying this more than the validity of it? The guy had 41 touchdowns and four picks last year and is a two-time MVP. So if he's getting his Z's during the meetings, it must be working. But this year, he has not been healthy really at all since the beginning of the season. They don't have the same offense that they had last year, and you wonder about his connection with John Harbaugh. So we won't be watching for that, but that's a storyline with Baltimore. And then Green Bay, if they win these next – well, here's where Green Bay gets interesting, is they still do have a chance to win the division if they win the next two games. And if the Bears lose to San Francisco, then Week 18 would mean something. And there's a big difference for the Vikings, because if the Packers come in here and play an exhibition game, let's say J.J. McCarthy plays and throws for 300 yards, who cares? I mean, that means nothing to me. Like, congrats, you played a preseason game and threw for 300 yards. Wow, like, hang a banner. But if the Packers are desperate and they can win the division, and there's a lot of energy to this game, hey, play spoiler, right? And J.J. McCarthy plays, still unclear, if he plays well, and they win and they beat Green Bay, that would feel like a major victory for them for the future with J.J. McCarthy and his potential. So it matters a lot. Like, weirdly, you should be, I can't really say this, because if they win the division, they get a home playoff game, and no one wants the Packers to have a home playoff game because they're obnoxious no matter where they are. But man, especially when they're at Lambeau, they could talk about Lambeau, right? But I think what you're rooting for is you're rooting for that game to matter in some way, shape, or form. And just like with the Lions, you get a chance to knock them out, at least a body blow. No, yeah, I guess you do want that. You do want them to win, and you want them to have a chance to win the division so you can knock them out of that chance. That's what you're looking for. And you can evaluate what you have in a big situation. But there's like boxes that have to be checked. They have to win this game. The Bears have to lose. J.J. McCarthy's hairline fracture has to heal in order to get to that point, so we'll see. Somewhat interesting game is Seattle-Carolina, though I think not much is on the line there for Carolina. Seattle, though, has to win because it's going to come down to, well, I don't know, because if Tampa Bay loses to Miami, then Carolina is just in the playoffs. So that one's a little convoluted.
So here's what has to happen there. Carolina to win the division this week, Carolina has to win and Tampa Bay has to lose.
Right, right.
Any other scenario, right, then there will be a Week 18 right, winner-take-all game in Tampa Bay between the Panthers and the Buccaneers.
Right. So that one's got, I mean, no, it doesn't really mean anything at that point then for them. But what about
I disagree. It means something to Carolina, because if they win and Tampa loses, they're in.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
This is the thing. People have talked about this. I've heard a couple different people talk about this week, and they're like, this game means nothing. It's all down to Week 18. They're like, no.
Yeah, if Tampa Bay loses to Miami, right.
If Tampa Bay loses to Miami, which could happen.
Quinn Ewers?
Miami has enough talent on that offense to challenge that defense. If Quinn Ewers didn't play horribly last week, And you could easily say he's played, I don't think, maybe not easily, but I think there's an argument to be made. He played better than Tua Tagovailoa has the last month. If they get decent quarterback play, you can get it to Waddle, you can get it to Darren Waller, you can let Devon Achane run up and down the field.
It's not impossible.
I don't think it's impossible.
It's the National Football League.
And Baker Mayfield continues to play hurt. He's one hit away from being out. He is.
So I want to point something out. So Chicago plays at San Francisco. That game is big because Chicago, if they win, then they will win the North. And not exactly great for the Vikings to have a team that has a guy on a rookie contract who's elevating as a young quarterback, winning the division. But there is a game that I'm going to be dialed into. And no, it's not Philadelphia versus Buffalo, the good teams that could play in the Super Bowl. No. It's the Giants versus the Vegas Raiders. The Raiders told Max Crosby he's not playing today, and he stormed out of the facility because he knows what they're doing. They're trying to land the number one draft pick. But if the Giants lose this game, then they get the number one draft pick. And the Raiders probably want the number one pick to draft Fernando Mendoza with the number one pick because they have no answer at quarterback. If they're able to do that, now I think the Giants aren't drafting a quarterback, so maybe they'll trade down or whatever, but you'd much rather have number one. If Vegas gets the top pick, they could release or trade Geno Smith to the Minnesota Vikings, and everyone will be enraged. But here's what I want to say about the quarterback stuff. That makes me sound excited about it. Trust me, I'm not, but I'm intrigued with what they really think of J.J. McCarthy, and it's going to show us. If they do something like that and trade for Geno Smith, then, oh, we know what they think of McCarthy and his future. If they get some mediocre Joe Flacco veteran, Carson Wentz, then, oh, they kind of believe in him. Right? Like, if they draft someone else, then they are so out. Like, we're going to find out. But I love this idea of two teams that do not want to win a football game having to play it. I love that. Okay, we need to take a break. I want to tell you about my idea to stop tanking when we return. We'll come right back. So here's my brilliant idea as this game is going to be played, the Tank Bowl, at 3:05 between Vegas and the New York Giants. I can't wait to see it. My idea is to implement a form of relegation only for December in the NFL and whatever, the first week of January. The final 4 weeks of the NFL season, what you do is you lop off every team that is at the bottom of their division and you put them in their own little league, those 8 teams, to play each other in a tournament for the number one overall pick. And that is the way you stop tanking, because then teams will have to maintain a good enough team to try to fight for the number one pick. And I think this would work in any sport. I love this for basketball, a tournament for the top pick. And if you finish first in the tournament, you get the number one pick. Second, 2, 3, 3, 4, and you go from there. These teams just play each other. Everybody gets to play each other, I don't know, twice over the last couple of weeks, however you'd have to work it. And they are seeded in whatever little tournament they're playing for the number one pick by how many wins they have. And so maybe you end up with a 7-win team is at the bottom of their division because it's bad luck and they're in a good division. And they go and they have the advantage and they win the tournament. Then there you go. That's a team that did not tank. They just happened to have some bad luck, but they earned their top draft pick through playing rather than through playing horribly and disrespecting the sport. Do you like it? You hate it?
I think that's pretty inspired. I like it. I like it.
All right, we'll flesh it out next time. I'm hosting next Friday as well for Henry Lake. So everybody stay safe. It's supposed to be pretty foggy and slick out there, and we'll see you then.